Okay, so we are going to dedicate our study to Yaakov ben Sima's Refuah Shlema. Okay, so that's Jacob Vaknin. So we will hopefully, in our merit of our study together, it will be a protection for him and for his speedy recovery. All right, so now, what we're going to look at today. Yesterday, we read from this is Exodus 12. From the Parshas HaChodesh, or whatever, finally we called it HaChodesh, which is the month. And I want to go through this because it touches on many different points that are very fundamental in terms of the upcoming holiday of Pesach, of Passover. And, Lawrence, you mentioned this idea that when you're going through the Tefillin and you're reading about the different Parshiot, the different paragraphs that are in the Tefillin, it relates. It's constantly referring to the Exodus. See how fundamental it is for us as our identities as Jews. This story. So, in this chapter, you really.
Jonathan, yeah. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Is this the Parsha you read every Rosh Chodesh?
No. This is the one that we read yesterday specifically. There are four special readings that we have before that lead up to, that really start in Chodesh Adar and then lead up to this month, Nisan, which is going to start Monday night. And that is that, we read Shkalim, the Shekel, about the Shekel, and then we read about Zachar. We read Para, which is the idea of the red heifer, the Paraduma. And the last one was yesterday, which is HaChodesh HaZalachem, the idea of first the first mitzvah of having a lunar calendar. But then it leads us into the whole story of having taken it says here, we take the lamb. So in that story there in Egypt, on the 10th of the month, we took the lamb, which was on Shabbos, and we put it aside for 4 days prior to actually having the sacrifice brought, and then taking the blood from that sacrifice and putting it on our doorposts, right? And then God passed over, the whole story here, right? So this parsha was yesterday, had a special reading where we took out a second Torah specifically to read this, and this is where it leads us up to the holiday. It's like the precursor, and we'll see in this how it talks a little bit. It talks about what happened in Egypt, that the first Passover, the first Pesach, and then what happens in terms of how it spills over really to the generations. Okay, so now there's a lot that's in these. In here, like I want to just like look at certain specific things, and one of the things I wanted to look at, that I've been thinking about a lot, is matzah. Matzah plays a very vital role when we think of Passover, Pesach. We think of two things: chametz. You can't have any leavened bread, and then we talk about matzah, right? So these are like key players in the story, right? Matzah, right? So now, the thing is that if you take a look and you read about the story of Abraham, and then it tells us that these angels come to Abraham and they tell him that he's going to have a son, Isaac, and that Sarah is 90 and he's, she'll be 90 and he's 100, and they're going to have a child at this elderly age. And then they go from there, these angels, and they go to destroy the city of Sodom, or the area of Sodom. And in the process, also, they go to save Abraham's nephew, Sarah's brother, Lot. And when they get there, so it tells us there that... why can't I have this here? It tells us this is... this is when the angels come there, and it says here that he asks them. First, he invites them in. They don't want to come in, and they say, "No, I'd rather sleep in the street." But then it says, "But he urged them strongly, so they turned his way and entered his house. He prepared a feast for them and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. he made them matzah. Rashi there says, because it was Passover. Okay? So what is everybody going to ask me? What are you talking about? How can it be Passover? This is talking about way, this is hundreds of years before the event. So what does it mean that they were eating matzah there? Okay? So what the rabbis teach us, the concept here is that embedded in time, specific periods of the calendar, we have certain energies, certain powers that are embedded into the time of the year that it's opportune, it's meant for, you know, different things to happen or to be like or we're gonna be able to experience this special energy that's associated with different times of the year. So Pesach already pre the Passover story, before the actual Exodus, they were already eating matzah. So, okay. Now, let's just assume, let's take it as is, that there's something that's special about this time of year that is opportune for a redemption type of event, this Exodus story. So we're going to say that it's almost, and actually we see this here, I'll just jump to this point. In what we read yesterday, it says, where do we find it here? Where is this line? That this basically, the night of when they went out from Egypt, was actually a time already where God was waiting from the beginning of the creation of the world. It was called Leil Shimurim Hu. It was a time that was already like waiting for this event to occur. Here it is, it's already here in verse 42. It's a night of anticipation for the Lord to take them out of the land of Egypt. This night is the Lord's guarding all the children of Israel throughout their generations. So this was a night of anticipation, like from the beginning of time, God's waiting for this night. So this is like from the beginning of creation of the world, this night is waiting for this event to occur. Okay? So this idea that they were eating matzah way before the event occurred is saying that there's something about this time that's opportune for redemption. The thing is like this, what does matzah have to do with it? Right? So like how does matzah tie in to the fact that this is a time that's opportune, that's meant for redemption? Okay, so like, how does that work? Right, so when you see something like that, so it's okay, that's nice, yeah, they're eating matzah, you know, on the 15th of Nisan, or the 4th, you know, because that was Pesach, you know, like before that. So, okay, so I get that there's this energy that's unique and special to this time of the year. And I would say the easy answer in terms of the physical reality of the world is that you see that the world is the spring is we're in spring, and so one second here I just messed up this thing. Okay, now it's working good. So the fact that we see that it's the world is coming to life, that there's this rebirth, that this idea of HaChodesh, like the fact that the first mitzvah that's given to us is this idea of renewal and redemption. So this is that, you know, it ties into the energies of what's going on in the world now. Just and so, you know, being that this is and we're focused on this part of the world as opposed to other parts of the hemispheres that aren't experiencing. Here we are, it's focused around, you know, Israel and the Middle East, so that the idea of spring is when this holiday has to be observed. So fine. But then the question, though, is how does this idea of redemption tie into matzah? What does matzah have to do with it? Especially if we're going to say that we're going to look at this and we're going to see that there's a theme that's going to be discussed of that they didn't have time. There was a lack of time for them. They were in a rush. You know, like, we got to get out of town. We got to zip. So there's no time to take whatever that thing you put in the oven. Got to make it quick. We got to get out of here. So there's no time for this. You know, like I get to experience on a weekly basis, like my daughter, my Alana, like we'll make challah. So the process is you put the dough together, you put the yeast in, and then it sits and it rises. So that's it's a process that takes time. Whereas when it comes to the contrast is matzah, there's no time. There's no time for it to rise. Now, so what does that have to do now with the idea that there's something about this time of year where there's things that are coming back to life, and it's ripe for a redemption, and so now, okay, we'll eat matzah to commemorate that. Somehow, there's something about matzah that is, you know, is symbolic, that ties into this theme of redemption. Okay, so that's kind of like what I was in. Like, I started like looking at this like idea. Like, if you're telling me that they're eating matzah way before the event, you're telling me that there's something special about this time of the calendar year that is it's ripe for this type of, you know, it's ripe for redemption. Okay, for, you know, this idea of renewal. What does that have to do with like the fact that you're going to make flatbread? You know, it's like, okay, so like, how does that, and why is that? Like, if I'm going to start thinking about this, I'm thinking about, you know, I can't have, it's, I have to eat matzah, and I can't have that which is the opposite, which is chametz, right? So like, so somehow this is going to be, again, when I associate, so I'm going to think about redemption, and it's going to equal for me matzah, and I'm going to do whatever I have to do to remove everything that's not in line with that. Okay, so far so good.
Yes. Okay. Well, what does that do with matzah?
Exactly. Right. I'm very troubled by this. I mean, yeah. Any theories? Anything that comes?
So why not redemption have to be? Why not have it deal with like? Drinking water or I don't know, some other physical item. Okay. Why is it linked to matzah?
Correct, exactly.
I get it. I get that it's linked to matzah at the time of the Exodus. But why is it linked to matzah hundreds of years before that with Abraham?
Correct, exactly. It really like it's and yeah, and if anything. There are a couple of things that come up. Like if you look at the, let's just look at this for a second. I just have to, I'm having a problem getting this thing to like move out of the way so that I can't see my tab. So hold on. Oh, there it goes. Okay. Check this out. In the Haggadah. So the Haggadah starts out in Maggid. It says, this is the bread of Halach Ma'anya, the bread of destitution. Gosh, whatever. Sometimes these translations. Okay, whatever. The poor man's bread that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Okay, so we're identifying the matzah as that. But then later on, when we talk about matzah, there are three things that you have to mention on the night. You have to talk about the Pesach, the Paschal lamb, the meat from that. The matzah and the mar, right? So it says there, this matzah that we're eating for the sake of, what is it? For the sake of, to commemorate that our ancestors' dough was not yet able to rise before the King of Kings. The Holy One, blessed be He, revealed Himself to them and redeemed them as it is stated. And they baked the dough which they brought out of Egypt into matzah cakes, since it did not rise because they were expelled from Egypt and could not tarry, neither had they made for themselves provisions. Okay, so this is like, so we have two things. We have an idea that matzah is a poor man's bread. This is what they ate when they were slaves. It's something that actually digests very slowly, which was good for people who don't have a lot of means. The poor, the slave in Egypt had a lack of ample food, let's say, it seems. And so they, you know, matzah was the way to go as opposed to bread. And then you have this idea of when they left, there wasn't enough time, right? So it's like two separate themes, within matzah, right? Okay, so that's, so we understand the issue. We have a question we got to figure out. Hopefully we'll get there. And we have at least two ideas of what matzah is about, right? Okay, so, and then, so again, so how is it that this is, so the idea that it's a poor man's bread and that it reminds us of being in a state of slavery, so that, okay, but again, that doesn't help us with our question of how does that tie back to redemption, this special time of the year, renewal, and matzah being the, it's like my poster of, hey, redemption equals matzah, you know, like, still don't get that. And why that would be pre-exist as like the natural go-to. But we also see that it's tied into how of when we come out. That like this is like also that they didn't have enough time. Right? So there's the poor man's side of it, and then there's the I didn't have enough time. We didn't have enough time as we left Egypt, so that this becomes like, all right, symbolic of the time that we left. So it's taking us to the actual time of slavery on one hand, and on the flip side, how it is that we were redeemed. Like the act of redemption ties into this lack of time. Okay, so we still have to figure out why this was a natural type of thing that we would be eating years earlier, knowing that this is a time of year that has this special power of redemption, of renewal, all these things that are happening here. Okay, so now let's look a little bit at what we read yesterday, which is really like it kind of is the roadmap, I would say. You want to know like what we're doing here when it comes to the whole this time of year and beginning with the first of the month of and then leading through this whole storyline, right? So let's just read through. The Lord spoke to Moshe and to Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month shall be to you the head of the months. So to you it shall be the first of the months of the year." So we already discussed this idea of that it's not only the idea of having the lunar, the moon cycle as our way of keeping track of time, but we also saw this idea that making a leap year, tying it into the solar cycle as well, right, to the months of the year, great. But what's interesting here is that God speaks only to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt. There's no commandment here of now convey that to the Jewish people, which almost is like saying that I'm planting a concept. This is very much a conceptual idea that's an underlie, like the important, like what this whole process is. You know, this, right? So it's just like, you know, you stop and you notice, like, this is a kind of strange. Like, why didn't God command Moses and Aaron to tell the Jewish people? He just said to them, you know, he spoke to them in the land of Egypt saying, and he makes this, you know, this directive without really conveying it, because the next line then says, "Speak to the entire community of Israel saying, on the 10th of this month, let each of you take a lamb for each parental home, a lamb for each household." So now it just right away goes into We're going from the first of the month now to the 10th. This is the in contrast, this is a directive to the people as opposed to this first concept of how we're going to track time. And now what is it? On the 10th of the month, they should go and they should take a lamb that they're going to make for this special carbon, for the special sacrifice. But if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his neighbor who is nearest to his house shall take one according to the number of people, each one according to one's ability to eat, shall you be counted for the lamb. So this idea of each household, this focus on household in the process of this special sacrifice, and that you shall have a perfect male lamb in its first year, you may take it either from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it for inspection until the 14th day of this month, and the entire congregation of the community of Israel shall slaughter it in the afternoon. So now, what they're being told basically to do is, on the 10th of the month, go and take this animal, which is going to end up being Shabbos. We call it the Shabbos Haggadah, the big Shabbos, because that they took this animal, which is one of the deities of Egypt, and in front of him, it basically in their face, they took it and they put it, tied it to the beds, or basically took it aside, made it very public that this is what they were doing, and then waited 4 days until this would be Thursday, and they brought which was on the 14th of the month, the sacrifice, and then with that slaughtering of the animal, so they took the blood and put it in the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses in which they will eat it. And on this night, they shall eat the flesh roasted over the fire and unleavened cakes with bitter herbs, they shall eat it. So now we have matzah coming in for the first time, and we have the bitter herbs, maror, and they ate it. It had to be roasted. And not only does it say once, again, it comes back, you shall not eat it rare or boiled in water, except roasted over the fire, its head with its legs and with its innards. And you shall not leave over any of it until morning, and whatever is left over of it until morning, you shall burn in fire. Okay? And then I'll read one more line, and we'll come back and analyze this. And this is how you shall eat it: your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is a Passover sacrifice to the Lord. Now, so you see this idea of time, haste. But the question I have is, why do you think it has to be roasted? They make a big deal. It's repeated twice. You must eat it roasted. And number two is, it has to be finished off that night. It can't be left over.
Also not something you do if you're in a rush.
Interesting. Okay. That's, what, roasting?
Well, it takes time and you have to finish it. And
okay.
You know, I don't know.
So why do you think the roasting? Okay, like
does it have something to do with sensory? In other words, when you boil something, there's really not a whole lot of smell. You roast something, there's a smell, there's a visual. It has to be tended. You have to be. It requires like full participation or involvement.
Okay, interesting. Anybody else? Any other theories as to why we roast? As opposed to other forms of cooking?
Michelle wants to say something.
Maybe it's like a symbolism to doing a carbon.
It's like a carbon.
Well, no, it is a carbon. It is a carbon. So you're saying, meaning I
well. No, but it's similar to what the, you know, what's going to happen later when you, you know, after the redemption.
Okay.
And what the priest did in the temple.
But did they, but did they, I am not sure that there was any type of limitation to how you could, like, when you brought a carbon, you, and it was a shlamin. So now we talked about the differentiation in the past, but just to go over it, there are different types of carbon, different sacrifices. There's the ola, which is completely burnt, no one eats it. The chatas has a little bit of a partial eating, but the shlamin, which is a carbon pasach type, meaning a shlamin is a carbon that says that you bring half of it is burnt and half of it is eaten. Part of the actual fulfillment of the mitzvah of a shlamin is eating. So like you're actually, it's a holy type of eating. You sanctify this part of the service is the eating. So when you bring a shlamim, is it only, I don't think that there's a limit. I think it's unique to this carbon, specifically that it has to be roasted. Okay.
Well, does it have to be do with the smoke and rendering the fat? I don't know. I mean,
no. So so these are good. Look, so Lawrence is saying it's sensory. You guys are also kind of giving me a sensory type of right.
That, yeah, but like when in the temple when Aaron or the priests would burn an animal, there was something about it being pleasing to God.
Right. Okay. You're right. So there was smoke that came out. Right. No. So that's interesting. Right. So in general, there's something, it's like it pounds the roasting part. So that's why I'm kind of leading you towards that, maybe.
Well, that doesn't make sense, because if you're in a rush, why take all the time to do all that?
Let me ask you something, Mr. I love making, what was that? What's your favorite dish there you like to make?
Chicken
Marbella? No, on the meat side.
Okay, I mean, I don't know.
You like to make a what?
Brisket?
Brisket, yes, brisket, yes, 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 brisket. Tell me. Tell me about brisket. Like, when you cook it, it has to be, brisket is by definition, it's with liquid?
Yeah.
Okay. So, tell me about your brisket. Is it hard? Is it soft? What's the texture?
It's a tough piece of meat that you got to cook the hell out of.
But once you cook the quote unquote hell out of it, what is it? Is it very like? Is it
soft?
It's soft, right? It becomes very soft. It almost like comes apart, right? That would be like you've reached your optimal, cooking of brisket with that liquid
right.
by like really almost like falling apart, right? Okay,
right.
Okay. So as opposed to in contrast, when I roast meat, it does the opposite. It actually hardens. Like if I do a like a steak, and I have really like a intense, like I take my barbecue up to like 700 degrees, and I take that and I throw it on there. What it does is it actually, what's the word for it? It actually makes it very hard. Sear, exactly. So what in essence it does, it's the opposite of that brisket of the liquid based, but rather it creates a very hard, it makes the meat completely, it's the opposite of it being soft in the sense it's like it's seared and hard.
You're saying it makes it transportable.
Okay. Well, right now I'm going to say that what it does is, and this is what I'm introducing here is an idea that I saw yesterday from the Maharal Prague. And his idea of what's going on here with the Karban Pesach is thematically, he understands it as representing what's going on here. And that is that God is making his entrance into, like he goes through these 9 plagues, and by the 10th plague, he's entering in and he himself is coming. It's no longer Moses and Aaron. This is God himself that's going to come and make a big cameo. And the nature of God is that he's one. Hashem Echad, God is one. And so the nature of the Karban is going to be an experience of unification. And everything about it is supposed to represent the oneness. And so I'm going to take this meat and I'm going to roast it. You know why? And I'm going to sear it. I'm going to make it hard. I'm going to make sure that it's very much one piece of meat as opposed to something that's kind of falling apart. And in our brisket, type of model of things that are falling off here, I want it to be very much representative of a oneness. And that's also why, as what we reflect, we always talk about God as being one, but the Jewish people are one. We represent God in this world, and the oneness of God, we become, when we're our goal here is to represent unification. And so the nature of how we eat the Karban is to be that representative of the oneness. So we're going to eat it together as a community. We come together. We have to eat it by definition as a group that can't leave over anything. If it was just me by myself, there's no way I can eat this. I'm going to eat a couple of days. I'll put the leftovers in the fridge. I'll eat over the next week or so. No. This has to be eaten together in one sitting. And the nature of the meat, how I'm going to treat it, is I want it to be one piece of meat. And so therefore, I'm going to roast it as opposed to any other type of cooking method because I want it to be as one. Okay, so that's the Maharal's idea. I thought it was like very, like, that's pretty interesting because then you start looking at, it's very specific as to how we eat it, how we prepare it, and how we eat it. So it's like, so that there's the aspect of God's oneness and then us as a community coming together creating this kind of unification through this process. Okay, so that theme of, and it's like, otherwise, like, how do you understand? Okay, like, yeah, roasting is good. It makes it taste good. No. There's a much deeper thing that's being messaged to us in the process of how the Karban Pesach is prepared. Thought it was an interesting type of thing. So now, that doesn't help us at all with our matzah issue. Okay, but we do see that matzah is introduced here in the process of eating. We're eating it with the meat, and with the maror and the matzah, okay? So we can't eat, have any left over, and we eat it in a way where we're ready to rock and roll, right? Because it says here in 11 that our shoes are on, our staff's in hand, we basically got our keys to the car in our hands, and we'll eat it quickly, okay? We shall eat it in haste. It is a Passover sacrifice to the Lord. And then it talks about Hashem. Now Hashem says, I will pass through the land of Egypt on this night, and I will smite every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. Upon all the gods of Egypt will I wreak judgments, I, the Lord. And the blood will be for you, for a sign upon the houses where you will be, and I will see the blood and skip over you, and there will be no plague to destroy you when I smite the people of the land of Egypt. And this day shall be for you as a memorial, and you shall celebrate it as a festival for the Lord throughout your generations. You shall celebrate it as an everlasting statute. Right? So this idea that Hashem himself is coming, and he's doing this himself, there's no messengers. This is like God showing, you know, coming like this incredible love. Like one of the things that the takeaways, like at the end of some people have a custom at the end of the Seder night to read Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim, which is basically, it's a challenging book to read because there's a lot of things going on, but what comes out, what's clear, what everybody agrees to in terms of, it's a love story. It's intense, of the love that's between the two lovers. And we say it's symbolic of either Hashem and the individual or Hashem and the Jewish people. But the takeaway is it's a story of intense love. And so that what's happening here and what we're commemorating, that when Hashem is coming down on this last of the ten plagues, is that he himself is coming and he's doing this. We in turn are doing our part. We're tasked to bring this sacrifice, to put the blood. Now that's like, if you notice the cell, like look at number 13 here, it says, and the blood will be for you a sign. So what do you mean? I thought this is about having a sign on the doorpost so that nothing happens to us. But no, it's for us also. The blood will be for you a sign upon the houses when you will be. And it'll be, and then God in turn says, and I will see the blood and skip over you. So that there are these two aspects that are going on here. Like the idea that we are going to come together as a group and we're going to eat this sacrifice together. So there's that piece of it. That's what's going on with us. We're going to see the blood and it's going to be a sign for us. At the same time, we have parallel. God is coming. He's the one God that is going to come in, and he's going to enter front and center without any intermediaries, and he's going to take care of business, and he's going to look down and see the blood, and then he will pass over. So like you see like these two things that are running parallel, and at the same time, we're getting ready to rock and roll. We're going to run out of town now. So there's this like, you know, things are, we see that there's a pressure on time. So even though like, yeah, we could argue about like, what takes quicker, you know, is it, I would think that roasting is much faster, right? So that's true. That's another part of maybe that, as opposed to like making that brisket that takes a long time to be made. But I like this idea that the morale talks about, that it's symbolic of a creation of something that's unified and keeps things tight and together. Okay, either way. Now 15, for 7 days you shall eat unleavened cakes, but on the preceding day you shall clear away all leaven from your houses, for whoever eats leaven from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. So now we have this idea, matzah, you should eat, but also remove the chametz. So that it's like, and in a certain sense, it's like you have these two, they kind of go together. Like here's the positive side, matzah, chametz is the negative side, and this idea, perhaps again, of time at play, that there's this, you know, the difference between one and the other is time. But now we have, and the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day, You shall have a holy convocation, meaning it should be a holy day. No work may be performed on them, but what is eaten by any soul, that alone may be performed for you. Okay, so ach asher yachel chol nefesh hu levado yasalachem. Right, that's an interesting idea of like a reference to the idea that when it comes to the holidays, as opposed to Shabbos, you're allowed to prepare food. Okay, but leave that aside. And you shall watch over the unleavened cakes, for on this very day I have taken your legions out of the land of Egypt, and you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting statute. So ushmartem es hamatzos, you should watch the matzah. Now what's interesting here, I think that maybe there's a little bit of, let's take a look here at this is the Maral, Gor Aryeh. So he says here, there's an interesting, the rabbis actually learn, they take from this line, Ushmartem et hamatzot. Let me show you what Rashi says. Okay, so let me introduce Rashi here. So Rashi says here, he says on this line of Ushmartem et hamatzot, you should watch the matzah, that they should not become leavened. For here, the rabbis derived that if the dough started to swell, she, the woman rolling it out, must moisten it with cold water. So this is the idea, like, how do you watch to make sure that it doesn't become? There are things that you could do to prevent it from becoming leavened. Then Rav Yoshia, Rashi brings this very strange, because Rashi is about, like, trying to understand how do you read the verse. How do you read the pasuk? Then Rashi introduces an idea. Rav Yoshia says, do not read et hamatzot, the unleavened cakes, but et hamitzvot, the commandments. Right? Matzah, mitzvah, matzot, mitzvot. It's like you could read it. They're very similar. And just as we may not permit the matzah to become leavened, so we may not permit the commandments to become leavened, i.e. to wait too long before we perform them. But if a commandment comes into your hand, perform it immediately. So the Maral on this, he says, what are they talking about here? Rashi's supposed to be explaining this, like, watch the matzah. What are you talking about? Watch your mitzvahs. Like, if you have a mitzvah, that you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, don't tarry, don't wait. Make sure you do the mitzvah right away. Like, what? It's like, how do you get from watching the matzah to make sure it doesn't become leavened to then talking about the mitzvos, that when you have a mitzvah come to you, that you got to be careful not to waste time. You'll miss the opportunity for that mitzvah. It's kind of a strange, like, how do you get from point A to point? Like, it's just, and especially if Rashi's trying to read the verse for us, just to explain, like, what does it mean to watch the matzah, right? So then, how does it mean watch the mitzvah? Like, how does one play with the other? It doesn't seem to jive. It's almost like it's a real stretch. At least on the surface, it looks like a real stretch. So any ideas, like, how would you tie this concept of the matzah and the mitzvah? Like, how does that play? Any theories that you want to throw out here?
Isn't the matzah, the watching of the matzah, that's a mitzvah?
That's true, but what is?
And you can't both. You have to deal with it right away.
Okay,
if you know you have to, that's why you can't wait.
But why?
Because it shows your enthusiasm.
Okay, good.
And it
good.
Connects. Good. And it gives you a connection to Hashem.
Okay.
He doesn't want you dilly dallying.
Okay. Good. Okay, I like it. But let's. That's on the first step. Good. What else? Lawrence, you wanted to say something?
Well, I'm just saying, isn't that, I mean, it's not specific to this, but aren't all mitzvahs supposed to be done as soon as you can do them? Or as
yeah, no, 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 that's exactly, and this is where we learn it from. They actually learn it from this, right? So that's, so what Michelle was saying, that's yeah, so this is 100%. So, yes, Yes, but is there something more? Is there another level? Like, can we say, okay, yes, but like, and on the basic level, what Michelle said is exactly on target. So, but now the question is, meaning is this?
I got some.
Yeah.
What does it have to do with doing it right away? Indicates that you are a free person to do them. Like, you don't. There's nothing you shouldn't. You know, the idea of freedom. If you link it to that, is that
okay?
I see an opportunity. I take it because I am able to take it.
Okay. Good. I like that. That's nice. That's nice. That's nice. Okay, but here, but my question though, just bring, always like when you see this type of structure, where they're saying matzah equals mitzvah, right? Like I have matzah, that there's something about matzah that I got to be really careful about time. Equals mitzvah, equals commandments, and has to be careful with time, right?
So if you wait, what about if you wait too long, you miss the opportunity.
Good, good. Also, right? But it's like, but it's again, like I'm trying. But it's like something about the matzah again. It's something about matzah because again,
ego. It's the fluff. It's tied in with
right. That's the idea. The Yetzer Hara. Right. Okay.
Unpeeling and. And,
okay, that's taking us on the Hasidic, down. The Kabbalistic side of Chametz, right? Now, Chametz is the Yetzirah, and it's like we want things to be unadulterated, right? Like we just want things to be, we want pure, you know? Like we're looking for things to be pristine and pure in a sense. And like, so there's something about matzah. What defines matzah is the idea that we don't allow time to get in the way. Now, things like this. Like, think about this. You got the master of the world, right? God. God is making his cameo here. Now, being that God, you know, is taking charge here, why is it that everything's got to be in a rush? Right? It's a kind of a strange thing. If anything, one of the things I would want to say is that being that God's running the show here at this point, maybe, wouldn't it be a greater expression of God's, you know, incredible power that he's going to say, you know what, we're going to take our time. We're going to make this into a big parade. We're going to take our time. And like similar in a sense, like Shabbos HaGadol, the idea that on the 10th day they took this lamb, and which is the deity of Egypt, or one of the deities, and in their face, we're going to keep that there for 4 days, and see if you could touch us. You can't do a thing. That was like the miracle there. So if that concept is at play there, then why isn't that we are rushing out of there? If anything, it should be the opposite. Let's take our time. God's running the show, the all-powerful Almighty, and therefore the greatest expression of his might will be that the Jews are going to spatzir. We're going to take our time. right? It's like, wouldn't it be a potentially a greater expression?
Well, what about the fact that this goes back to where in the beginning you said, you know, the matzah is the bread of affliction or the poor man's bread, and the poor man doesn't have anything. I mean, he's stripped down to the essence.
Okay.
And if you made a big deal out of it and you had all these like great, you know, accoutrements along with everything, that's a lot of things to weigh you down and slow you down. And, you know, maybe it's just better if you, you know, they get out before they change their minds, before they think too much about it. And they don't have anything to carry. They don't have anything to, you know, to sort of be weighed down by or slowed down by. And it's just all stripped down to the essence.
Right. Okay. So
but why not take the fastest route to becoming a free person?
Okay.
Why dilly-dally around as Michelle? Why dilly-dally?
Right.
So if you have an opportunity to be free, go ahead and take it.
Right. So we have freedom as expression of freedom. We have the idea of like, don't wait around, like seize the day type of thing, right? We have a mitzvah. We have this opportunity. Like this is, if anything, the way we said it is that this is the time that like God from the beginning of the creation of the world, of humanity, he's been waiting for this night, for this day, for this time. This is like, this is one of the most important, events in the history of the world. So we're not going to waste time here, right? We got to make sure we grab it, right? Type of thing, perhaps, okay? But if we're saying that this is a night, that this is an event that is an expression of God, the coming out, so to speak, right? So how do we understand, in a sense, time when it relates to God, right? If we're noticing that there's like this idea of chipazon, we got to rush. We're rushing. We can't let this water and flour mixture, can't let it wait. It's got to happen now, okay? So the Maharal says that what we're saying here, all the things that we just said are 100% on target. This does not negate one thing. I think they're all elements and layers that we have in this, in what's going on here. But what Maharal adds in here is that the idea of the chipazon, the rush, if we're talking about God making his cameo and playing here, the idea of things happening instantaneously are, in a way, an expression of the fact that God is not at all limited by time. So how would I express that in the physical reality of things is to say it has to be done like right away. Everything's got to be done immediately. The immediacy of this whole thing is the truest expression of God. Okay, so that this chipazon, the rush, like it has to have, like boom, like it's happening now. Let me just see here. Let me just read it to you. This idea that there can't be any type of waiting is that idea of it happening immediately is the best way, in a way, to capture this aspect of God's being above time. That it happens like in an instant. The instantaneousness of things, if that's a word, is really the idea, is an expression that with God, there's nothing, time is not a limitation. And so therefore, he says that this idea with, when we have God interacting with time, the idea of being able to express his being above time is when things happen instantaneously. Does that make sense? Like, am I explaining it okay, or is it not? Does that like resonate at all, or not so much? And you can be honest. If it's not clear, then nothing.
are you saying that? By doing this quickly, we're getting closer to Hashem.
I mean, No. What I'm saying is like this: the way to express when we have we live in time. We're physical beings. We live in a physical reality. We live in a world with boundaries and it's governed by processes and time. When you have a being that's above time, the way that he can express his interaction when God comes into the world, which is what we're describing here, like we know the story, like we don't stop to realize like this is kind of a strange thing. The being that is we call Hashem's name is Yud Kei Vav Kei, right? We say the name. We don't actually express what that means, the name of God, the essential name of God, as we don't pronounce it, but what we're relating to is that God exists above time. He's the God that was in the past, the present, and the future, which means God is transcends time. So what do you do with the being that transcends the physical reality when God comes into the physical realm? How do we relate to that? So the Maharal explains that the way that we relate to that is this idea of chipazon, that things happen instantaneously. It's like to say that things are like quick. It's because the way that the non-physical interacts with the physical, it has to be in relation to time, which God is not at all limited by. So in a strange way, it's that moment. It's a moment when that interaction occurs. These things are happening in instances, like moments, quickly, because it's the non-physical relating with the physical. Okay, and that, so that concept of, so like we have different concepts of God's coming in here. One is the oneness. We talked about the idea of roasting as opposed to like, there's a concept of us coming together, reflecting. We're like the reflection of God's oneness by coming together, unity, unification. That's the oneness part. The other part of this idea of a non-physical, a being that's not limited by time, interacting with time, how am I going to express that? Instance. It's like that moment. It's a moment, a momentary thing that, because it's the natural interaction, it's not a natural thing. This is an unnatural event that's occurring. And so in that process of that, when these two intersect, it's going to be expressed within moments. And so therefore, we, as an expression of that, how we relate to that, we have our matzah, right? That has to be done instantaneously, which now bring it back to mitzvah. Because what's a mitzvah? You ready for this? The mitzvah is the commandment of God, right? So now we have God, again, the one that's above time, that's not in the physical, relating to us and saying, do these things because they're going to make you better spiritually, right? So when the morale is saying, you know why they pulled this matzah mitzvah thing? Like, because they have the same thing. They're an issue of how God intersects and relates to us, to man. And that is the mitzvah. Matzah is also that expression. It's that when God came down on this night, this unique moment in time, and intersected with the physical universe, it's expressed with matzah. Matzah is an expression of God's intersecting with this moment in time. And therefore, it's instantaneous. It has to be done. It happens right away. The same thing with the mitzvah. The reason why we want to grab it is because it's our way of connecting to God. So how do we connect? Time is essential because it's a spiritual thing that doesn't exist in time, intersecting with the physical thing that is all about time. And so what do I do when I have a mitzvah? I want to grab it. It has to be, that's the expression of connecting to that thing that really is something that's coming from a place that is above time. You hear? So like God above time intersects with the world at this event called Passover. And so everything that we're doing has to be done quickly, because when this weird thing of when time intersects with that which is above time, it happens within an instant. And so all the things that are occurring on the Pesach night, on that night, has to be rushed. And mitzvahs are an outgrowth. A mitzvah commandment is an outgrowth of this thing. Also, I got to grab it, because it's this weird thing of the spiritual thing that's above time that intersects with that which is the physical, that is totally defined by time. And when those two things intersect, in order for me to really optimize it, I got to grab it. And so therefore, this strange thing where Rashi all of a sudden is like bringing us this like, what does that have to do with matzah, mitzvah? It has everything to do with it. The whole idea of matzah is an expression of these two things intersecting. This spiritual, non-physical realm that's not based in time, intersecting with the most physical, time-based reality. And when those two things intersect, we want to rush, because I want to capture it, because it's not something that's actually physical in a way. And so therefore time is like of the essence. And so we capture it in this way. You hear? It's a wild, I think it's like, I mean, when you look at it, like, what does matzah have to do with a mitzvah? But it has everything to do with it. Because what matzah is an expression of is this issue of capturing the spiritual within the physical reality. And the two intersect in this weird thing called time, and so that's why everything is rushed, And that's why matzah is everything to do with the redemption. Because think about it. Now go back to the starting point. We started the whole story by talking about how we measure time. The first thing that God tells Moses and Aaron is, you know, we're talking about redemption. It's all about time. How do you measure time? How do you approach time? How do you relate to time? And how are you going to do it? It's about this idea, process of renewal. We're going to watch the moon, how it cycles, how it goes away, how it's reborn. But now you understand time, this physical reality, which is time, which is measured by time, how redemption is to be redeemed, how to be able to, you know, come and become, you know, this elevated being. It's how you relate to time, which is basically, in essence, is saying, here we were, steeped in physical difficulty. It's like we were in such a physical reality of slavery. And God is saying, I'm going to introduce myself and spirituality. The being that is beyond physical and time is going to intersect into this reality and redeem us and take us out and allow us now and lead us on a path of elevating this whole physical reality. And somehow we're going to live in a space that's going to be able to somehow create a fusion between the physical and the spiritual. And therefore, in this process, how do we celebrate it? It's about matzah. It's about rushing. It's about grabbing and taking enough and maximizing our time to be able to elevate the physical reality to this higher place, a place that isn't limited by time. And how is that done? In the instant. In this, you know, and so matzah becomes emblematic of that. And so going back to the beginning of time when you have loaf making matzah on Pesach, it's because matzah has this idea of capturing, like doing things in an instant. And that's what redemption, like the redemptive process, that coming back to life is, but it's how the physical world intersects with the spiritual world. And so it's all about time. It's all about how time is optimized. Like the idea of, like you said, like taking that mitzvah and doing it right away, like grabbing that, making sure. Because what we're doing is we're taking the commandments, which is coming from that world outside of time, and when it comes in, that's exactly what we need to do to be able to connect the two worlds by grabbing it, not letting the opportunity be squandered. But it's because it's all about time. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So, it's like you're saying, these are fleeting moments, and if you don't grab them, you lose out on them.
Right, but it's when these two worlds intersect, it's intersecting. Now again, there's this same idea. I don't want to complicate it, but I can't help myself. Is the mun? The mun has this aspect also where God sent food, right, which is a physical thing. But it was coming from God in that from the non-physical realm. The manna had like this aspect of, it was like a little dot. It was the place where the physical and the spiritual met. It has the same, which again, there's a whole connection between matzah and man as well, because what the Jews ate in the desert was man, but it also has connections to matzah and this and that. And I think it's the same idea that when you have these two things connecting, it's expressed in a physical, on the physical realm, it'll be the most like the least physical thing. That's why the man is like this little like seed. Because
I actually see the connection between the man and the matzah.
Awesome, good.
Based on your discussion, based on your explanation, that I actually see, maybe even more so, because that literally disappeared, right?
Correct. It was barely physical, right? It was the point of where the spiritual comes together with the physical, and therefore it's this little thing. The same thing, that's what matzah is also. Matzah's coming, and it's saying that I'm taking something that's physical, but this is where time is it's like the expression of the meeting of the spiritual world with this physical world. In terms of those two things meeting, also time is a major play, and so that we remove we try to limit the amount of time that's going to be at play with matzah. Anything that has an abundance of time is too physical now. I've removed the spiritual, and the spiritual elements really are when I take that or I limit the amount of time. That allows, in a certain sense, because time really is how we measure the physical reality. So if I'm gonna, in a certain sense, limit the time as much as possible, that's matzah. That's the way we ate the Karban Pesach that first time. We did it in a rush. The nature of the whole experience was that of pressing time to the least amount possible. So that, because that's where the physical and the spiritual meet. And that's the night of Pesach. When God came down, in a certain sense, only God could do things instantaneously because he's coming from that place of the non-physical, the non, you know, the unlimited, there's no time factor and limitation. That gets us into like, you know, that's when our heads start to explode. We think about like, you know, that everything in a certain sense in the physical realm, like God's in the past, present, and the future, it's all happening simultaneously. That's already beyond. We don't understand that. It's that we live in a physical space. But how do we capture it, to Michelle's point? When we have a mitzvah, which is coming from that world of outside time, we grab it. We have to do it right away. That's how we connect the highest level possible. And that's matzah. Matzah is that. That's what matzah is. So what does God do? He creates a world that has spiritual manifestations in it that allows us to be able to connect to these things. So for example, the idea of how the moon cycle, the lunar cycle, how it waxes and wanes, and that rebirth, that is how we are going to be able to relate to time and take time and say, we can make this into a spiritual thing. It's where these two things intersect. And so Hashem gifts us right away from the beginning of our existence, the idea of Rosh Chodesh. He gives us the ability to be masters of time, to be able to master, in a certain sense, the physical reality and allow it to become a spiritually elevated type of experience. And so the Torah, the mitzvot, that's Hashem's coming to us and allowing us to connect to him and to his and to that higher realm through physical activities. But how do we master it? And then, by the way, the whole book of the Mesil Yesharim, there's a lot that Rav Chal talks about this idea of like this issue like of grabbing a mitzvah, like doing it. But it's this idea of the intersection of the spiritual and the physical, and it's about time. So matzah is, and the whole idea of Exodus, redemption is, when we redeem humanity, what we're saying is we're saying this thing called man, humanity, can be elevated to the highest realms. And that's why the Exodus story is so important, because it's when Hashem comes down and he says, you guys can be so big, you could be elevated beings. You can master time and the physical realities of this world and become such big human beings. And because what we're doing in essence is what we're saying is that we're not limited by the physical reality. We're actually able to elevate to much higher planes, and that this thing called, you know, this creation can be taken to such a higher place. And it's expressed here in matzah. That's what matzah is. Matzah is the symbol. Now I take it and say, matzah, that's my poster for the redemption. Because what it is saying is that it's at that place of the meeting of the physical and the spiritual, which is time. And physical is more time. And I'm going to take that time and I'm going to elevate it. And I'm going to be a master over it. And I'm going to take those commandments and I'm going to grab them. I'm going to, you know, go and do them right away. Because I'm not going to let time get in the way. I'm not going to let the physical get in the way of the spiritual. And so matzah is that. In matzah itself, it's the highest expression. It's one of the highest expressions of this, you know, idea of time not getting in the way, the physical, not letting the physical reality get in the way of my connection to God. So as God comes down, He intersects with us here in the Pesach story. He Himself comes, and we do everything in a rush. It's all about limiting like time because I don't want to get in the way of that meeting. And matzah is one of those things that symbolizes that. Because it didn't have enough time to rise, because it's not, I don't want time to get in the way of the essential, like of what things can be. That's matzah. So they're already, years earlier, when they connect to this power of redemption, they're eating matzah. It's the natural thing. But it's also, that's why I don't let time get in the way of my doing a mitzvah. It's not just a play on words. It's not. Matzah is this thing that I don't want to let time get in the way of me connecting to God because of that, of connecting to that spiritual realm.
Oy, gevas, shkoyach.
Okay.
Heavy.
Yes.
Yeah, deep.
It's deep, but there are times when you see these things, you're like, really, come on. It's nice play on words, but then when you take it deeper, this is what I'm hoping that I'm explaining what the Maharal was conveying here, but it also explains what matzah really, like, that's what matzah is. It's like, I'm holding on to something that tells me that it's all about how we connect with God. Time is a big deal. Because what it's saying is that time is the physical reality, but when God interacts with that physical reality, if I limit the amount of time, I'm actually able to really connect on the deepest level. And what it says about us as beings, is we have that spiritual, non-physical element. And so I want to take my physicality and I want to elevate it. We eat the Pesach, we eat the Korban Pesach, and we eat the matzah, right? These are all like, we're taking the physical thing, and we're saying we can elevate our physical reality to like this incredibly, incredibly high place. That's what we're saying when we eat this, when we eat the matzah, when we talk about the Korban Pesach. It's saying that the spiritual reality we're in is extremely lofty when we connect it. As God gives us the opportunity to do matzah, maror. Here we are. Like, no, this is like holy work. We're doing holy, holy work.
I'll never look at matzah the same way again.
That's the idea.
Oh my God.
Mm. You're not going to be able to make a brisket. You're never going to make a brisket the same way.
Every time I make a brisket, I'll be like,
I'll have
to
make a brisket for Pesach.
There you go.
I know, but
No, nothing wrong with making your brisket for Pesach. Just now you'll think about it and be like, oh, yeah. If I would roast this thing.
All right, everybody. Have a great day.
Happy birthday.
I got to get going.
All right.
Thank you.